Bill, if you could present your case.
Okay. This is a 62-year-old woman from Chicago who is a lifetime non-smoker. She presented in December of 2003 with a malignant left pleural effusion. She was evaluated actually at the Cleveland Clinic in Naples and had a positive fluid cytology for adenocarcinoma. They did immunohistochemical stains that were negative for ER, PR, and negative for TTF1, a lung cancer marker, but it was felt to be consistent with pulmonary origin, although nonspecific. She also, at that same institution, underwent a bronchoscopy that showed no endobronchial tumor. There was some extrinsic compression, and bronchial washings were positive for what they called poorly differentiated non-small cell carcinoma. PET scan showed uptake in the left lung with only an effusion and atelectasis on CT scan. Also, a little bit of uptake in the left breast. She had had a mammogram about a month earlier that was negative, and there was nothing palpable. Uptake in left axilla, bilateral neck, and she had a few scattered bone lesions. She was treated as if she had non-small cell lung cancer, which was our working diagnosis, and treated with zoledronate, Taxol, and carboplatin. She had 6 cycles, no longer any further pleural effusion reoccurrence, and had normalization of her PET scan. There actually was some adenopathy in the chest as well, and that decreased. She went back to Chicago for the summer, as many of our patients do in Southwest Florida. And while in Chicago, she developed a recurrent left pleural effusion, more bone mets, and was started on ERISA. The pleural effusion continued to reoccur. She came back again to Fort Myers for the winter in November of 2004, and her PET scan showed extensive bone metastases and intense uptake in the left breast, and again, multiple nodal sites. She had a mammogram that showed a new increased density in the left breast, nothing palpable again. Ultrasound showed a 0.8 centimeter maximum dimension lesion. At this time, we thought maybe this somehow is breast cancer. She was sent for a left breast biopsy, which was done under needle localization, and it was a grade 3 infiltrating ductal carcinoma, ER 99%, PR 1%, had a high Ki-67 of 85%, and HER2 new negative by FISH. She was started on letrozole in November 2004, had resolution of a pleural effusion, and follow-up PET scan in May 2004 was completely normal. She continued asymptomatic, went back up north again for the summer, came back again this late fall. A new PET scan showed some recurrent activity at L4, some activity in the left pleura, new uptake in the right pelvis, but nothing anywhere near as bad as it was. She was mainly asymptomatic, maybe a tiny bit of shortness of breath and a very small left pleural effusion.
It was your impression she was progressing?
My impression was she was progressing.
So this is after about a year of letrozole?
Yeah, about a year of letrozole.
Before we talk about what to do at this point, I'm curious, Skip, what are your thoughts about the case in general?
Interesting. Living in the land of Dr. Greco's unknown primaries, we've seen a few of these come in this way, though, where you have a woman non-smoker with some disease that's non-specific. Interesting that the first tumor samples were ERPR negatives.
Again, that was on pleural fluid, so correct. I just wondered the accuracy of that.
Do you know the accuracy of ER and PR in pleural fluid?
No.
There are no real systematic studies. There are scattered case reports of being able to do ERPR and having results that are the same as the primary. But in terms of how often do you get a false negative relative to the primary, at least I haven't looked at it for a year or so, but the last time I looked it up, you're hard-pressed to find a really good systematic study that would tell you that. The flip side of that is that lung cancer can also give you positive ER, weakly positive, not the kind of blaring that she had with her biopsy, but it can be a false positive going the other way, so it can be very confusing.
It's always easy to Monday morning quarterback. Anything that you think it could have been done differently, maybe, to figure out that this was breast cancer earlier?
Actually, a very good workup. No, I don't think there's anything I really would have added on to what happened there. I think it was...
Me neither.
The harder thing would have been if she was ER positive on the pleural fluid. I certainly think at that time it would have been reasonable to have said, let's spend 6 or 12 weeks with some hormonal therapy and see how it goes. You know, if she'd been in the land of unknown primary treatments, the only thing different would have been she would have gotten a etoposide added to her paclitaxel and carboplatin, and she still would have had a great response. And it's interesting that being a non-smoker, not responding to the gefitinib or the ERISA. Most of the women non-smokers get at least stable disease for a good period of time, and the response rate is probably pretty close to 50% in that group. So it started to evolve out to be a breast patient. Disappointingly, I agree with Bill, it looks like she's starting to progress. Letrozole was a good treatment choice there, and surprisingly, it didn't last a little longer.
So what do you think you do next, Skip?
Based on her symptoms and where her disease is, the choice would be whether to give her fulvestrant or whether to give her single-agent chemotherapy. I think in this setting, seeing the lady would be worth a lot in terms of how it is. She seems to have had fairly symptomatic pleural disease, and with 12 months of benefit on letrozole, I probably have a lower threshold for going ahead and switching to chemotherapy at this point for, and be it capecitabine as a first choice or being a single agent, docetaxel, something like that would be what we would be discussing.
What about bevacizumab?
Actually, not a bad thought at all. I've had poor success, so it's not in the front of my brain right now with the insurance companies in Tennessee with bevacizumab. I would say next year that'll be what this patient would likely get, and I think that their trials are being done that'll show bevacizumab will probably work just as well with most of the chemotherapy regimens there. So I think it'll be bevacizumab plus something else, and that's what the patient will get.
If she were going to get hormonal therapy, you mentioned fulvestrant. What about tamoxifen?
Tamoxifen, not a bad thought here as well. That certainly wouldn't be an unreasonable thing to look at doing.
If you were going to give her fulvestrant, would you continue the letrozole?
No.
Dan, how would you think this one through?
Almost ditto. You could argue having done an MRI, but if you had called me at this, when you get to the PET positive in the lung, ER negative, PR negative, mammogram negative and palpable, and said, should I get an MRI of her breast? I'd have said no. It's a waste of time. This lady has lung cancer. Treat her like that. And Skip said the treatment she got works in breast cancer too, so ER negative, PR negative, you're off to the races. I think that was perfectly well handled. Now that she's progressing, I don't know any data that continuing letrozole and adding fulvestrant is better than just switching. People are trying to think about how to design such a trial. Those are hard trials to do, as you know. I would actually say, again, you got to be there, and you are there and I'm not, but if you felt that you had enough wiggle room to wait a couple more months and see if hormone therapy would work, I still am a hormone guy first and a chemo guy second. And I would say, would you rather have a shot or would you rather take a pill? Because I think the two drugs probably have an equal chance of working, tamoxifen versus fulvestrant. I don't know of any difference between the two. And if I didn't think I had wiggle room, you covered the bases. I think she's got lots of things to do. And I do not know how to use bevacizumab in breast cancer. I'm confused.
It's interesting you say you'd ask her about a shot or a pill. Overall, in your practice, in that kind of a situation with metastatic breast cancer, what fraction want one versus the other?
It's not like this has come up that often, especially in a lady who's never had tamoxifen. That's relatively rare. It's going to become increasingly common as we're using AIs in the adjuvant setting. But last week, a patient had progressed on an AI. We were sure that she would want to take tamoxifen, and she was about 80 years old. And she said, no, she'd rather get fulvestrant. She'd rather have the shots. So my nurse was flabbergasted. We were convinced it'd be the other way around. Go figure.
It's interesting. We did a study of 260 women with metastatic breast cancer, and Leslie Fallowfield did a very similar survey in the UK where we asked them, in a situation of equivalent efficacy and side effects, what would they prefer? And both our group as well as Fallowfield's found that about a third of women preferred having an injection. Putting aside the reimbursement thing, just method of administration. What did you do, Bill?
Well, there was no reason to not try hormonal therapy. She had really fairly minimal amount of disease. So I added fulvestrant, and I used the breast cancer update doses that I've heard. So I've done this in a few people now. I don't know if it's better or not, but I've used the 500 milligram loading dose and then 250 in 2 weeks, 250 again in 2 weeks, and then monthly 250. And I don't know if it's right or wrong. You know, she had such a great response to letrozole. Some of these people have had great responders. When I've come in this situation, I've tended to just add fulvestrant. There's no way for me to know. I don't understand why it would be harmful, but obviously there's no data on that.
There are trials looking at this strategy of continuing an AI and adding in fulvestrant versus stopping the AI and starting fulvestrant. One is the SOFIA trial in Europe. I think the thinking there is it's competition for the estrogen and that a lower estrogen level will be more favorable for fulvestrant. Does that logic make sense to you?
Well, it makes perfect sense. I think it's just expense and side effects. The flip side of that is Southwest Oncology Group is currently running and actually accruing quite well to a trial of a front metastasis with no prior AIs, and it's anastrozole versus anastrozole plus fulvestrant, again, with the feeling that the combination of the two might be more effective. I'm sure that we'll have higher response rates in that study, because every time we put two hormones together, we get higher response rates. I think the real issue is, do we have a longer time to starting chemotherapy? That's a hard endpoint to get to, and the statisticians were having seizures when I suggested that should be their primary endpoint. So it's not, but at least we're going to try to capture those data. Because to me, that is the primary endpoint, is how long can you keep a patient off chemotherapy?
Skip.
I echo those sentiments, and I agree with what Bill did, and that certainly was reasonable. I was going to make a comment about bevacizumab, and Dan had alluded to the issue of not sure how it works or why it works. And I think breast cancer is going to be a great disease to try to, if the trials are done correctly, to look at dose and duration of therapy. Because I think the consistent point, and I've seen the spiels about the three or four different things that bevacizumab could be doing to help retard tumor growth, but the consistent thing across all the trials is the improvement in response rate. Even the original capecitabine trial that was negative by time to progression primary endpoint had a 50 to 100% improvement in response rate, depending on how you look at it. Same story for the lung trial, very impressive. The first line breast trial, the colon trial. So I think it's going to become a standard because you're going to get a bigger bang for your buck with that initial chemotherapy. And then do you need to continue it? Can you stop it? How much do you need to give are going to be the important questions to answer. But that improvement, be it tumor permeability or tumor delivery to the chemotherapy, it's an impressive difference.
You both seem to have favorable feelings about capecitabine. What about capecitabine with bevacizumab and metastatic disease? Dan?
It's been hard for me to be evidence-based with bevacizumab. It sort of worked by itself way out back. It sort of worked with capecitabine with responses, but not time to progression or survival. And suddenly it works great with Taxol up front. And the question is whether it worked great with paclitaxel up front because that's the right drug to give it with or because it was just up front. And again, as you alluded to, there's a trial asking that question. In my own practice, the few times I've used bevacizumab, it has not been in that situation. It's been in people who have gone through other therapies, and for a variety of reasons, I thought it'd be a good idea. And I've maybe only given it now to 8 to 10 patients, and I've had a couple of people who were pretty refractory to things who seemed to be responding to bevacizumab plus something. So I was part of the capecitabine plus or minus bevacizumab, so I had a little experience there, but I only put 2 or 3 patients on it. This is my first experience, and I've been impressed. I've had a couple people where it would have been, I don't know what else to do with you, and suddenly they're, are you all having the same kind of, yeah. And I'm worried the insurance company is going to come back to me and say, it's been proven it doesn't work there, we're not going to pay for it. And I actually don't know how to handle that either. I don't know whether to tell a patient to go get cleared before she comes back or go ahead and just start it and hope she doesn't. And we're really telling people to make sure that they know what their copay is, because a 10% copay of $100,000 is a lot of money, as opposed to a $5 copay to see me in clinic. And I really think that the price of this drug is just unbelievable.
Getting back to fulvestrant, Skip, what about the issue of loading dose with fulvestrant? Do you use that?
I have just started using that. That is interesting. I think that I know there was an initial flurry of discussion when the drug was first approved about don't give up on it too soon. You've got to get a few doses in to see the result. And it certainly mechanistically would make sense that a loading dose would work for that sort of therapy. So it's an attractive thing to do. And there's, other than cost, not a big downside to trying it.
I absolutely load. I feel more strongly even because the randomized trial that Kent Osborne published, remember there was a middle arm of a lower dose of fulvestrant that was stopped because it wasn't doing as well. This is clearly a dose-related drug. And the pharmacokinetics suggest that you do need to load to get it up. And again, it goes back to wiggle room. We talked about your patient. You're only going to get a couple months with this lady before she may get worse pleural effusions, and then you're going to be forced to go to chemotherapy. And I think you need to give it a good shot right away or you lose that window. So in our clinic, we load routinely.
It's interesting, Mike Dixon reported in San Antonio in premenopausal patients where I guess we really haven't seen much efficacy or change in receptors with fulvestrant using large dose, I think 750 milligrams, where he saw responses in premenopausal patients. But they're also thinking about that same strategy. Instead of doing that, do you give them ovarian ablation and lower the estrogen level? Where do you think fulvestrant in premenopausal patients is heading?
In my hands, I have gone ahead and coupled it with ovarian ablation, either surgical or with one of the GnRHIs. And so my premenopausal women, on the most part, become postmenopausal, metastatic disease only now. But I'm a great believer in ovarian ablation, assuming the patient is willing to do that.
So ovarian ablation and fulvestrant?
Yeah. Well, now you have to give me a case, but most of these women have not had an AI yet because by definition they're premenopausal. So I would do ovarian ablation and an AI as my first line. Then if they progress, I would continue the ovarian ablation and add fulvestrant after that.